better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title, the Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Which one are you going just immediately? You going Pittman or you going Musselman?
Okay.
Not to say they can't both have success.
Your question was, okay, you used the word success. First thing we got to do is define success for each of these programs. If success is winning the championship, if success is winning either a division, which you don't have divisions in basketball, so it'd be a regular season title, then I think basketball is the more likely of those programs to have that level of success. I guess it really comes back to the first thing you got to do is define what is success. Because to me, success is much, it looks much different in the football program right now on the immediate horizon than what basketball success looks like. I define those two things much differently at this point. I expect more out of my basketball program at the University of Arkansas than I do the football program in the next, say, 2 to 3 seasons. So I guess the first thing before, we got 3 hours here, so we got time to talk. What do you define as success? Because the difficulty of winning a title or a championship in football is, to me, a much higher bar, much more difficult than what Eric Musselman's facing. So how are you defining success
here? I think with basketball, there's just getting back to the Sweet 16. That's the hump you haven't gotten to since 1996. You haven't been in the AP Top 10 since 2005, since 1995. So the level of success you're talking about are different. With Arkansas football, I don't know. I think you just want to be where you were in 2010, 2011. I think that's fair. Now, I'm not asking for that all the time, but every once in a while, you have a year or 2 years where you are competing for the SEC West title. And that's doable. We saw it with Bobby Petrino at Arkansas. So the levels of success you're talking about, it's hard to ask both the football and the basketball program at this point in time to compete for a national championship, especially in football, considering where you're at right now compared to everyone else. But the levels of success, I think, have to be clearly defined when it comes to that. So if you want to say that, if you want to just talk about who's going to have more success, you're probably going to go with Eric Musselman based on the program he inherited in its position comparatively where Sam Pittman inherited his program. That's just, it's an easier job. Yep. That doesn't mean that Sam Pittman can't do great things at Arkansas before he hopefully retires, rides down the sunset and hot springs on his lake house that is yet to be built. But that's the question.
He's going to get a bigger one now.
I would think so. I know, if I remember asking Clay this a couple months ago, he has yet to start building on that, but it's probably going to be one of the fattest lake houses on Lake Hamilton in central Arkansas.
Yeah. I think this success looks like a lot of different things. You know, one thing that's success in football that we're enjoying and talked about all week in basketball is you cleaned up in state. All the guys that grew up here, and maybe they went off to Oak Hill or Monteverde with KK and Moses, like we've talked about. Maybe they didn't finish their high school careers here, but they're Arkansas kids. And they're all coming home to play basketball. They're all staying at home to play basketball. That's success.
We got four or five. Let's just go ahead and put an asterisk on that. Okay. You didn't get all of them. You got four, which is still great, but I'm just saying.
Chris Moore's going to Auburn. So that's, but the reality is you're not struggling to get in-state kids. They want to come here. That's what I'm trying to say. In football, that would be like one of the initial steps of success. Success in this program is if Pittman can just reestablish it to this is the place that the overwhelming majority – of great high, not just high school play, all of, you know, a lot of them want to play here. The great ones, the ones getting SEC level offers, want to come to Arkansas and not go to another SEC West school. You want players that have offers elsewhere but choose to come here, particularly in your state. You look back at any era, any period of success in Razorback football history, it starts with, particularly on the offensive and defensive lines, particularly offensive line, having in-state kids. You've got to get back to a point where in-state kids want to come here. You mentioned and referenced 2010, 2011. The most successful eras of back-to-back seasons. Quite possibly in my lifetime, you'd have to compare the late 80s there where Quinn Grovey and Ken Hatfield and that crew led the team to back-to-back conference titles. But all of these teams, you know, and particularly when you think about 2010, 2011, had a good amount of Arkansas talent on the team. To me, that's one way you define success. I know the bottom line is how many did you win, how many did you lose? And in basketball, it's not so much that as much as how far did you get in the tournament. But you got to win some games to get to the tournament. So I think success is dressed up in a lot of different outfits, Ty.
You spoke to players wanting to come to Arkansas. Hunter Yurcheck addressed that last night on the Hog Hustle with RJ Hawk and Danny West.
I think what speaks volumes is, especially those Arkansas kids, most of those kids, the University of Arkansas was not on their radar screen a year ago when Eric Musselman arrived on our campus. What he has done is he's made it in vogue again for the great players we have throughout the state of Arkansas to want to come and be an Arkansas Razor.
Devontae Davis was committed to Oklahoma State. Moses Moody was not going to come here. I think that Jalen Williams, I don't remember if Jalen was committed to Oklahoma State or he was heavily looking at the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Think about KK Robinson, Chris Moore. You might get one or two of those guys potentially, but you were able to reel in four or five, which is a really big deal. And that drastically changed when Eric Musselman got here. We have to point that out, that you probably don't have a top six recruiting class if Eric Musselman is not your head basketball coach. Time and time again, these kids referred to his NBA experience being one of the biggest, if not the biggest reason, they're at Arkansas right now.
And you got to consider the transfer portal now as part of your recruiting. I know it's not the traditional high school route, but Ty, the players he's gotten off there, and even a Jimmy Witt who came back, you know, those things have to be factored in as well.
Hunter Yurcheck went on the Hog Hustle last night with Danny West and RJ Hawk. You can listen to that every Tuesday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. on ESPN 104.3 Harrison Mount Home and ESPN 95.3 Fort Smith and the River Valley. Here's what he said about Eric Musselman and how he feels like Arkansas basketball is relevant again in this state.
And you see that where, you know, whether you want to call them the Fab Four from Arkansas, the class he's put together and mixing in a couple of the grad transfers and then the guys we had sitting out this year developing behind the scenes within our program that will play this year. He's done an incredible, incredible job of recruiting and making Arkansas basketball relevant again throughout our state.
It's not that it wasn't relevant. It's just not what people thought it would be. And I think that was what you really defined the Mike Anderson tenure is when he got it over the Pelfrey, when he got it over the Stan Heath hump. You're waiting to take that next step. You're waiting for the Sweet 16, which if you look back to two games against one team, North Carolina, you were closer in 2017 than you were in 2015, and you came up just short. And you could look at games earlier that season that they probably should have won and gotten a higher seed. There were some recruits he missed on, like Archie Goodwin, Kayvon Allen, Malik Monk, that you really wish would have stayed home, especially Malik, who ended up being a top 10, top 11 recruit. And now you get four or five, and it helps that you have five in-state kids that are top 100, like Eric Musselman had to choose from. You hit 80%, which is pretty stinking good on your first recruiting class. Plus, as Tommy mentioned earlier, the transfer portal is such a big weapon for Eric Musselman and his staff. You saw it in just a couple months when his first real recruiting class when he got the transfers in, and now this is his first full cycle that he has the combination of the transfer portal and the in-state kids. It's going to be really interesting to see the level of success that he can have as the Arkansas head basketball coach moving forward.
And who hired him, by the way?
Hunter Yurcheck.
Hunter Yurcheck. I just think that can't get stated enough that these ADs want their guys. I mean, that's always a big deal of who you hired. You know, who did you choose to fill these spots? When you inherit someone, they better have wild success. If it's anything close to mediocre, probably not going to last. And that's usually how it works, right? Because, well, I can hire someone better than that. That's always the thought in the back of your brain is in any spot where you're choosing, when you know, in transition, choosing what staff stays and goes. There better be a lot of resume there, a lot of credit built up, or you're probably not going to make it. Because I need that guy that I chose. And that puts everybody in a more comfortable position. So I think the fact that Mike Anderson was not hired by Hunter Yurcheck, he was there through the transition, it was inevitable there was going to be a change in that spot. Just like Chad Morris really wasn't a Hunter Yurcheck hire. I know he rubber stamped it like day one, hour one on the job. He wasn't his choice. You think if Hunter Yurcheck had been hired 30 days prior, 60 days prior, he'd have hired Chad Morris? Now, it's easy to say no in hindsight, but, you know, maybe, maybe not. But it was pretty clear that guy wasn't going to make it pretty early on, particularly with his AD. So having your own people, having people you vetted, you chose, you hired is such a big deal.
I'm curious to see what happened behind closed doors with certain boosters, because you've made the statement, I think, before that you don't think that Chad Morris was Julie Crumber-Peoples' hire, correct?
Well, there's those rumors or theories out there that she was just the face of the search. There was really a lot more.
It's a lame duck operation.
Right. A lot more involvement with boosters or the upper end of administration, board of trustees, and making that choice. I still think, and it's just that part of it, not all of it, was he was wrecking when you didn't get Gus. I think Gus stumped for Chad Morris. It's his buddy. It just didn't work out. I don't think Chad doesn't know football. I just don't think Chad's a very good head coach at this level. I think Chad probably will have some success as a coordinator again. You just hope it didn't, you know, against Arkansas at Auburn. I just think he was way in over his head here at Arkansas, and the way he handled players from the get-go was wrong.
I made this statement many times. When you're the head of a SMU football program, you're the 10th most talked about sport in the state. I mean, there's some
in
high school. There's some more
in
the Tri-County area.
Yeah.
You think about the Stars, the Mavs. There are some high schools like Allen and some of the other great football programs in that Dallas-Fort Worth area that get more talked about than you do. So he was not used to having the same pressure that he had when he stepped on the Arkansas campus, where every fan pays attention to every word that is uttered out of his mouth. He says anything Arkansas fans flock to, good or bad, they're going to pay attention to it. So that's an important thing that I don't think Chad Morris grasped before he arrived at Arkansas, because there's pressure in college football. But the SMU program, to where it was, to where he brought it, that was not the expectation you had at Arkansas. The timeline had to be sped up, fair or foul. That's what Arkansas fans wanted. And when you don't have as much pressure and then you're thrust into a situation where all eyes are on you rather than in Dallas, as you mentioned, I kind of overlooked it. It's not just the state where you're the 10th most talked about program. Well, it's the city itself where you're probably the 10th most paid attention to sport. When you think about the massive amount of beat writers, television people, radio hosts that pay attention to what came out of Chad Morris's mouth on a daily basis at those press conferences, I would go out on a limb and say that he probably had close to only like, I don't know, five or six people that covered him.
You could fit them all in this room we're in.
Correct. And that is not the case when it comes to Arkansas media, especially when it comes to big-time press conferences, because the SMU football program doesn't garner the same amount of attention as the Arkansas football program does.
Nope.
And I think when you look at Hunter Yurcheck, he does deserve some blame for what happened with Chad Morris. We can't just gloss over that. He supposedly, now, unless he just lied and he's saving face, he supposedly gave that stamp of approval for Chad Morris.
How long were their introductory press conferences were at the same time in the baseball? I mean, he was on the job. That deal was done. It was handed to him. He didn't, and maybe that would have been the direction he would have went. I don't know. I just think it might have been a different selection had he had 30 more days.
I'm not disagreeing with you there, but you can't just, like, he's not. It's a difficult situation because as the athletic director, you're not just like, I didn't hire this football coach. We'll give him a year or two. If he doesn't pan out, I'm going to hire someone else. But at the same time, when you give someone a stamp of approval, it's just a difficult thing to quantify because you can't be against your football coach, but then you look at it from,
publicly
at least, and I don't know what he was like privately. I know that the picture made rounds of him just like his head's just, what game was that?
It looked
the Auburn
like
you, game? I think it was the Auburn game.
He had that Arkansas jacket on. He's sitting in the back of the media room.
It's sulking.
It looked like you after a night on Dixon. I mean, it he was in pain, you know.
I would have a pizza box next to me and I'd be asleep on the couch. That's what my nights
typically
look like.
That'd be your pillow.
Look like.
Yeah, that's a pizza box.
That would be my pillow. There's a funny video I'll show you during the break of that exact thing, and me and my Christmas sweater just sitting next to a pile of pizza. But
where we started was Hunter Yurecek and talking about building relevance back for the basketball program. We got sidetracked again. The launching pad Eric Musselman had that he inherited from Mike Anderson is so much different than what Sam Pittman's inheriting. And I think it's even more improved than what Chad Morris inherited from Brett Bielema. The basketball program was in a much better position than any of these last few handoffs
no
in football.
Question. No question.
Any
and,
of them.
And then you're talking about it might be a better situation than what Brett Bielema inherited from John L. Smith. It's 100% better. There wasn't, like, you think about
but you're not that far removed from success back in 2012.
Yes, that's why you got to remember that while this is, it seems like it's an eternity, it seems like it's a lifetime since Arkansas football's had success in the Southeastern Conference. You go back to 2011, and that's only 9 years ago since you were competing for the SEC West and potentially a national championship.
So what happened in football? When you got beat by UL Monroe, Tyler got the concussion, and the season collapsed at that point, right? All those coaches knew they were fired. They knew no matter what happened the rest of the way, they were gonzo. There was no John L. getting another year. There was none of that stuff. All of those assistant coaches knew they were gone. Go ahead and put the sign in the yard at the house. We are for sale. So what happened then? Nobody recruited. You know, you lost a class. And when you lose a class or two in football, you just it takes a long time to overcome that. And that's where it really began was the lost recruiting that you had, you know, when you had such an early sign of what was going to happen at Arkansas, the recruiting was over.
Who's that lefty that was from Arkansas, the quarterback that for Monroe? I can't think of it. I think it begins with a C. Colby something maybe, but he was from Arkansas, didn't get an offer, goes to Monroe, ends up running in for the game when he touched down, I think in overtime. Jenkins, will you look that up for us? I can't remember his exact name, but if I remember that story correctly, that's something that he was probably very vindicated that he went into War Memorial Stadium and beat the Arkansas Razorbacks. Yeah. And there's that gif that I know many of you have seen where the kid's crying and the dad puts his hat over his head because he's on camera and it's just a tough situation. And since then, Arkansas football has not recovered. Brandon Allen has to start his first game as a true freshman against the Alabama Crimson Tide. And he didn't recover until Auburn in 2015. We're going to have Brandon on later this week. I want to talk to him about that because you think about the intangibles. You think about the maturity. You think about just the eye test and the emotional and the I can't think of the word that I'm trying to go here, but the mental part of the game. Brandon Allen was basically scarred in 2012. When you lose to Louisiana Monroe, and it's not his fault. Tyler gets injured, and he's in an immensely difficult situation. Yep. They lose that game, and then he's thrust in. Oh, by the way, not only did you
coming
lose,
up next on the schedule,
you got the Alabama Crimson Tide, Nick Saban, and that game would have been that was at home that year because they played Bama on the road the previous
52
year,
52-3, and it was raining.
It started out okay, and then they just got housed. But
remember, they changed the long snapper, and John L. said, "Well, I saw something in practice this week. Maybe change the long snapper, snapped it over their head." I mean, it was
a disaster.
It was a disaster,
and so Brandon, unfortunately. That hurt his confidence, I think, and he didn't allow himself to fully regain it until his senior year when they beat Auburn in OT. And there's so many different little pivots in Arkansas football that came out of that specific game. I remember Trevor Maddage on College Football Live was talking about the one team that was preseason ranked. You got to remember, Arkansas was preseason ranked top 10 that year, number 10 in the country, and Maddage gets on that screen and says, "This team will not be ranked by the end of the season." And I was eating at a wing place in Little Rock, and I wanted to throw my all-you-can-eat wings at the TV because I was so mad. It's like, this guy, this ESPN analyst, doesn't know what he's talking about. Arkansas and John L. Smith, we're going to go to a bowl game. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Little did I know, he was exactly right. It collapsed on itself. John L. Smith was a disaster based on the press conferences, based on the coaching. It's a difficult situation. You move on, you bring in Brett Bielema, you have some tough goes to start, and then you're like, oh man, light at the end of the tunnel, you beat Texas, you win 3 out of 4 to end the 2014 season, 2015, You somehow lose to Toledo and Little Rock. You get clobbered by Patrick Mahomes and Texas Tech. You lose other close ball games consistently in his tenure. Move on to Chad Morris. No good things out of that tenure. And now you're with Sam Pittman. It's been a tough timeline for Arkansas football as of late.
Guy's name at Louisiana Monroe was Colton Browning.
That's it. Yeah, I knew it began with a C. I couldn't remember his first name.
Actually, it begins with a K, but that's fine.
Okay, whatever. So I think he close enough. I think he's from, if I remember that right, he's from the Little Rock area. But not fun to lose that kid. That's a traumatic experience Arkansas fans don't want to remember.
So we started this segment talking about relevance and playing Hunter Yurecek on the Hog Hustle last night and talking about returning relevance to the program. You know, you've been able to do that because you've had in-state kids to recruit. One of the issues Brad Pielema had, one of the issues to a great degree that Chad Morris had, is there hasn't been an overabundance. Man, we can't recruit all these in-state kids this year. Man, if we could just get 80%, there hasn't been that luxury. Petrino had that for that first honeymoon that he was here, because there was Joe Adams, there was Tyler Wilson, there was Beckett, there was all these great players in Arkansas. Not to say there hasn't been. I mean, Hunter Henry's probably, is he the best high school football player that's come out since 2012?
From Arkansas?
Probably. I think he was in the 13 class, if I remember right.
Yeah, he's my age. Yeah. Graduated
so,
my year.
I mean, he's probably been the best. I mean, he just signed the biggest contract of an NFL tight end, so
10.2, I think.
I'll use that as my first piece of evidence, Your Honor. So, I mean, but then beyond that, who's the next 10 great players to come out of Arkansas that they were able to recruit that have all went on to do, you know, that have proven to be, well, these were real misses for Arkansas. I'm just saying there hasn't been the overabundance of talent in this state, and that's one thing. I don't, if farmers make fields or fields make farmers. You got to have some good soil to till. You got to have a good place to plant, and that's about recruiting, and that's what I'm talking about here. Arkansas hadn't been in a cycle, a consistent cycle, like we're seeing right now in basketball where, you know, Eric Musselman's got the players. Now, I'm of the belief he'd go find a way, and the transfer portal wasn't around in 2012, 13, 14, 15. Now it is. But they're going to have to find a way to, if you can't get the players here, you got to go get them somewhere. And Chad, to his credit, he couldn't win a damn ball game, but what he could do is go to Texas and get some players. And they're going to have to figure out a way, whether it's Texas, which has always been a major pipeline for Arkansas, they're going to have to figure out somewhere, Louisiana, somewhere outside of the state to go get players.
And as much as you hate the football program that resides in Austin, Texas, you don't necessarily hate the state of Texas as a whole, but Arkansas football would be nothing without Texas. Let's be honest. You think about some of the historically, Arkansas's best teams have been combinations of Razorback players that grew up in the state and then ones that are from the state of Texas. That is a big issue. And when you look at the recruiting,
when you play the Southwest Conference, though, that's where you had to go get players because you played half your games in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't necessarily been, and Chet, as you mentioned, to Chad Morris's credit, he did a good job of recruiting Texas, unlike Brett Bielema, who really fractured that relationship inside that state when he sure said did. What he said at the coaches' clinic. And so it's an important part of the process. And here's something you as a fan listening right now that probably has a nephew, a son, whoever that's playing Arkansas high school football in this state. Unfortunately, and this is where you have to separate pride from reality. This is, and it's hard to do sometimes as an Arkansan. Pride from reality. The Arkansas high school football in this state is not at the same level as any other Southeastern Conference state, period. End of the day, end of story. That's Kentucky, too, which is the second worst in terms of recruiting aspect. You can look at the statistics over the years. I can have those to back them up. Arkansas has, unfortunately, if you look at just the numbers, not necessarily if you want to dive into talent, if you look at just the numbers, has the worst recruiting talent year by year comparatively to other SEC schools. So as you were talking about earlier, do farmers make fields or do fields make farmers? Well, Arkansas has the difficulty of there's not a lot of great fertile football, not basketball, football recruiting ground. So you're already at a difficult disadvantage to where your program is now. On top of that, you just can't go pull in 15 in-state kids that are four stars or whatever. That's not a realistic possibility. Now, these kids might not be highly ranked and they could do something with themselves. Houston Nutt was fantastic at finding diamonds in the rough and going throughout there. That being said, you just have to know that Arkansas football talent does not stack up to other states in this conference in terms of numbers.
So what's happened? What's changed? And this has been a conversation that's went on for a decade. You know, because it used to not be that way. Used to, you could, you know, Houston Nutt, you just mentioned his name. He would go recruit enough kids from this state to be very competitive. Well, the league's changed to a degree, but what's changed in our state? We're not the first to say it. We won't be the last to say it. Central Arkansas football over the last 10 years has not been as good as it was maybe the previous 10 years. Maybe that's changing a little bit. Programs like PA, Pulaski Academy have been very consistent. Bryant been very good. North Little Rock has been excellent the last few years as well. You've got to
Where's Patton at now? That new school in Little Rock?
Southwest
something. Yeah. There feels like green. You know what it is, Jenkins?
Yes. Yeah, because they're in our conference. Maybe it was...
It'll start till next year, but I think
like
Southwest.
Dragons or something. They got like green and yellow colors.
Little Rock Parkview's made a resurgence with Coach Boulding there. I mean, so as I'm of the belief as more athletes come out and actually play and participate in better quality football in Central Arkansas, and you've still got great coaches, facilities, and players in Northwest Arkansas in the River Valley, you combine all that, there's just going to be that extra 4, 5, 6 players a year maybe in our state to choose from at some point. But that can't happen overnight. That's what's got to happen is you can't have the biggest metropolitan population base in our state not be producing players for you. Nutt, being from Little Rock, was able to recruit that area. There was just more energy and passion around football in that era. And you know it. You grew up there. High school football at that time, particularly public school football, was better. It's taken a lull. Now it's back. But what's always been consistent out of Little Rock? Basketball players. And that's the culture of the community. It's more, I mean, you tell me, Little Rock's more of a basketball town than a football town.
100%.
Look where a lot of these players coming out of our state that Musselman's after, what region of the state are they from?
Central Arkansas.
I mean, those are some of the realities of what we're talking about here. And not that there's no football players in this state, but there's more Division I, FBS level, Power 5 basketball players going to sign out of this state this year than football.
In relative to, there's always going to be more football players, but if you look at the relativity.
I'm just talking about the level.
No, 100% agree.
They're signing.
And if you think about the Central Arkansas thing, Moses Moody, Devontae Davis, K.K. Robinson, all from the Central Arkansas area. Now, Chris Moore, way out east, West Memphis, Jalen Williams right here in Fort Smith, the River Valley. And when you think about Central Arkansas stuff, one of the other factors you got to look at is a lot of kids are specializing today. Back in the day, you'd play football, then you'd play basketball, then you play baseball. Now a lot of coaches and kids are saying, oh, I'm just going to do this one sport. Because of that, you have less players playing football, basketball, and baseball. You have guys focusing on football. You have guys focusing on basketball. You have guys focusing on baseball. And when it comes down to it, because of the injury and the long-term effect that are associated with football, if you're a parent, what are you going to more likely steer your kid to? Basketball or baseball? Basketball, and especially if your kid's athletic, you're probably going to steer them the basketball route. That's typically what's happened with Arkansas, because I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, Devontae Davis would probably be a pretty good wide receiver. Chris Moore would probably be a pretty good tight end. You could say that about a lot of different football players, a lot of different basketball players. Oh, well, what if this guy played the other sport? Typically, that would probably bode well.
You talk about specialization. You got two players that we spent yesterday talking about, K.K. Robinson and Moses Moody, that moved to another state to finish high school. To do what? Why did they go there? To specialize in basketball.
Basketball, correct.
I mean... So, to your point, yeah, players willing to move, uproot parts of their family or whatever your situation is to specialize in basketball.
Jordan and Greenwood, text in. If you want to text in, get on this conversation. 877-377-6963. Jordan, I'm going to disagree with you. He's under the impression that Greenwood will not miss a step with Coach Rich Jones. I can't get in line with that.
You can't remove, not that Chris Young's not going to do a great job, because Chris Young's been by Coach Jones' side, and he's going to do an excellent job, but yeah, you can't remove a legend like Rick Jones, one of the greatest high school football coaches to ever coach in Arkansas or Oklahoma at the high school level, and not say, not going to miss that guy. Now, you're hoping that's the case, but that's not going to be the case.
He's on the short
list. And I think Chris Young's going to do a great job here.
Young, foul, and one. Wow. Oh, Young again.
He's smiling at that. I don't blame you.
Back come the Hogs the other way. B.J. Young.
One of only four five-stars in the history of Razorback basketball, an all-SEC freshman, and one of the most lethal scorers in the past decade. Let's welcome in B.J. Young, former Arkansas Razorback. B.J., you heard some of your highlights coming in. Between the Florida win over the number two team in the country or the Missouri win where you ended the game with two and ones, which game stands out to you as more memorable?
I would say that beating number two Florida was pretty fun because they were the top guy. And it's always fun knocking off some top competitors. But that hometown rivalry in Mizzou, it was really, really fun. That was really, like, one of a kind. It's feeling I'll never forget. I love that game.
Meant a little more to you as a Missouri guy, I know, kind of around the St. Louis area. I'm assuming you really had something in there that you really wanted to beat the Missouri Tigers that day.
For sure. Coach Anderson, just because he coached there. When I was there, they really didn't even recruit me. And I always had a grudge against that.
But I remember hearing about this when you got to school. Your senior year, heading to the state championship where you guys won it all, you guys beat Bradley Beal and Chaminade in the corner finals by 1 point. Can you tell us about what you do remember?
Oh, yeah. That game was probably the most talked about and most memorable game in St. Louis basketball history. We were just having a huge argument about that on live with some other guys from St. Louis basketball. To take you guys through it, they beat us earlier in the year on ESPN, and it was like a big game because we were both ranked top 15 recruits in the nation. I think I was like 15th at the time, and he was probably second or third. Wow, it was like two classes of Giants at the time. And when we played, and like I said, they beat us the first time. This one was actually to get the championship. That was just a regular season. This was to get to the state championship, and everybody from both sides of town were coming out, so the gym was flowing outside the doors, and it was like a back-and-forth game the whole game. So we was giving them what they wanted, and we both probably had like 35 points apiece. I just happened to pull it out at the end. So actually, I had a grudge against Florida, too. That's why I said, when you said Florida or Mizzou, Brad went to Florida, and I wanted to still make sure we beat them in college as well. So I didn't mind the Mizzou or Florida when you ask me that question either.
B.J. Young with us here on The Morning Rush. I know you're playing overseas. We're going to talk about that, playing in China and what the prospects of that even look like right now. But how much do you get to keep up with Arkansas basketball? How much have you seen Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe? And how much do you really know about this last year's team with your career being halfway around the world?
Man, actually, since Coach Anderson left this past year, I usually was keeping up with the guys, but I got a little bit out of touch when Coach Anderson left, you know, because that was my guy and a whole new staff came in. But I still want to keep up. Like, I got to come back. I want to come back and work out with the guys and get to know them and get to know the new coaching staff as well. That would be love. And I'm down to do that anytime. I love this, you know, Arkansas love.
B.J., I wanted to ask you about, you know, obviously a lot of people paying attention to what Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe are going to do. Mason has put his name in for the draft, but hasn't hired an agent that we know of yet. Isaiah Joe still weighing his options. You went through that after two seasons. Walk us through the process mentally. What's going on their side of it right now as they try to figure out what their best choices are for them?
What grades are those kids in?
So Isaiah is a sophomore. Depending, might come back for his junior, and then Mace is a redshirt junior.
Yeah. If I'm Isaiah, since he already stayed two, I would come back. I don't know. Man, it depends on how hot the iron is for him.
Like Mason was SEC, co-SEC player of the year, averaged 22, had a hell of a season.
He needs to leave yesterday. He needs to go. There's no reason for that kid to return. No reason, and everybody in Arkansas knows it. Me, after my freshman year, there was no reason for me to come back to school. If you did what you had to do, they should be happy. He's happy, and they should let the kid move on with his life. If I was Joe and he feels that he can come back and give one more solid performance in a year, junior year's kids are pretty hot too, I would come back. But if he feels like he's a professional and he has the right group of people around him, he should take that next step.
You went undrafted but worked your way through the Rockets organization but spent some time in the what's now the G League and some others. Tell us what life is like at the G League level and those levels just below the NBA.
See, it's actually a lot better in the G League now since I've been in, and it was pretty solid back then. But I think they're even getting paid more now. So kids that come out, they have a nice option. But when I was in it, it was I went through my summer league process. So I was practicing with the Rockets. They picked me up right after the draft. They gave me a call, and they was like, we want you on our summer league team, and we want you, you know. So I was first, we had a couple practices, and guys like Pat Beverly and Terrence Jones, they were still playing in the summer league as well, even though they had played in the playoffs the year before. They had came back and were playing in the summer league, so I got a chance to practice with them. But, like, I was in Orlando, and I had to sit out the first two games because Pat Bev and those guys were still playing. But when I got my chance, I played pretty good. I showed what I can do. And they signed me to, like, a partial contract, you know, and then I went down to their D-League team. And the D-League is that's kind of different. It was, at the time, I was pretty young. So it was like, it was a lot of older guys in the D-League. So when you're on your, I was pretty young and you're on your own, you're just kind of trying to get acclimated and see what's going on because, you know, the NBA, they're flying everywhere. And even college, you're flying everywhere. When you go to the D-League, you're traveling by bus. Like, you might travel 4 hours in a snowstorm on a bus. For sure, I have before in small towns like Iowa, small little Iowa, you know, anywhere. And you just have to get used to doing that coming from a big platform like Arkansas and coming from Plains and being the youngest one. I probably was the youngest kid in the whole G League at the time when I went. I was probably one of the youngest people because I had to be only like 20, you know, a year or two out, and it wasn't that many people my age in. So it was a good experience. And, I would just say I think they got a lot better with it now.
Is that a hard adjustment going from Arkansas where you're flying private charters, you're staying in the nicest hotels, there's always a great buffet with breakfast and dinner and pizza after the game, and every need's taken care of, great facilities? Is that the hardest adjustment? You think, well, I'm in professional basketball now, I'll have everything, and you find out facilities and treatment and travel and all that's just not quite as good as it was at college.
It's a little bit of an adjustment being a younger guy, but coming from St. Louis and not coming from much, you know, that's not the major part for me. The major part was, like, sometimes, like, guys may be coming from the NBA. They may be signed to an NBA team. And, like, prior to the season, you may do everything correct, but your coach may tell you, like, it's going to be a guy coming from the NBA team who has to play 40 minutes a game. So you can only play 8 minutes a game, BJ. Like, even if you do everything perfect, this player is signed to the team, and he's going to come down, and he has to play this certain amount of minutes. So you can only play 8 minutes per game, even though we know you're just as good as him, but he's signed, and you're just in our D-League system. So it could be a situation like that. So you just have to learn how to manage and stay focused and say, okay, I will eventually get my turn. I will eventually get a fair shake, and I will be able to play and show what I can do. So you just got to stay mentally prepared for the, you know, ups and downs in a mental game also.
Speaking with BJ Young, former Razorback here on the Morning Rush. BJ, I remember when you burst on the scene, you really stood out to me. You're going to the defending national champion Connecticut Huskies, and you hang 28 on them. Do you feel like that game kind of really set the tone for your freshman season?
I think it really did. Like, it just let people know, like, ooh, like, we got something on our hands. there's not. I would just want to know that I'm not. I wasn't fearful of going in a hostile environment and giving a show and playing my best and not being afraid to play against great competition. Like when I play against the best competition, you're probably going to get the best out of me because I'm so ready to show that I can compete with the top guys. That it just comes out of me. And the UConn game, I really just, that was just another game. I have, like, coming from high school averaging 30 and going on a circuit averaging 35, and I just felt like, shoot, I'm supposed to be doing this at the time. It was only 7 games then.
Just picking up where you left off from high school, right, man?
Yes, sir. That's why I felt like I was supposed to be doing that.
You mentioned some of your teammates in the G League for the Rockets, Terrence Jones out of Kentucky, Patrick Beverly out of Arkansas. You got to play with Marshawn Powell. That duo of you guys was pretty fun. BJ, who was your favorite teammate, and then who would you say your best teammate was that you played with over the years?
Actually, James Harden was on the team, too, and Dwight Howard was on the team with me. So, actually, I would probably say have to say James Harden.
That's a pretty good one, man.
Yeah. Good name.
Yeah, like, we were, I got, like, some funny little stories. Like, we used to play, like, King of the Hill. You guys know where King of the Hill is when you do the one-on-one line.
And you stay. Yeah. If you score, you stay. If you don't score, you move out, right?
Yes, yes. We were doing those pretty much in the summer every day. Like me, James, Pat Bell, Jeremy Lin, Isaiah Cannon. Like every day, me and James would be the only ones to win a spot. I would not. I kid you not. It'll be like 4-4, 4-5 every spot. You know, like in competition, like I just told you, like, you know I'm going to play super hard. So, like, we'll get to the last spot every day, me and him, 4-4. You got to score on me, James, or, like, call a foul or something because we were just going back and forth. And that's, like, a memory that I had that I just remember. And, but James, he has so much stuff, and he's really big. Like, most people don't know how big he is. I think James Harden's probably 6'7", like 240. He's a huge, he's a really big guard, a really, really big point guard.
BJ Young with us here on the Morning Rush. You've been playing overseas, been playing in China. What's that experience been like for you the last 3 years?
Oh, China has treated me so well. I have played and lived over there. And, like, I've got used to the culture and, you know, being over there. China pretty much has everything you can possibly think about. Like anything you want to, you know, start up a business or any venture, you can pretty much go find your market and your surplus and start your business from scratch if you want to. And on the basketball side of things, they just show me a lot of love out there. And I have a lot of fans. I even have my own basketball shoe coming out later this year. It's going to be called a BJ Young. Yes, it's promoted on my Instagram, and since the corona pandemic, we just had to slow down. The factory's closed for a second just to make sure everything was safe. What, so once that gets back up and running, we'll have the shoe later this year.
Yeah. What's the, I mean, obviously everything's shut down now with coronavirus. Were you there when this outbreak happened? Tell me what was going on with you and those around you as you were kind of near or at the epicenter of what has now plagued the world.
Yes, I was. When it first started, it was in, apparently they said Wuhan, and Wuhan is way up north in North China. I was in South China, down in a city named Guangzhou, and it wasn't really affecting us because the corona really can stay along where it's cold in cities where it's colder, and most people don't know that. And so since it's cold up North China in Wuhan, it was affecting them a lot. But like I said, I was down south where it was hot. But since it started to get worse and they shut the whole city of Wuhan down, like they wouldn't even let the people leave out of the city for a time period. And then after that, they put in a law to where everybody had to wear a mask. It was mandatory you wear a mask. If you didn't have a mask, you couldn't go into a store or they could refuse your service. They wouldn't, you know, so they had to start doing a mask. And then sometime we were driving down the highway, it would be like a temperature check. Like, it would be a police and a doctor outside, and then you have to stop the car and put your head out the window.
Wow.
And if you have a fever or anything, you would have to get out the car and go quarantine wherever the quarantine is if you were okay. you can keep driving down the road and go to your destination. But it was getting critical, so I had to, you know, get back to the States just for a second.
That's just scary to think about, the way of life we have here versus they just drag you out of your car and take you to a corner. That's just scary.
Once I start seeing that, I was like, well, I probably want to go home for a second.
B.J. Young with us here on The Morning Rush. All right, we heard this whole started with someone eating the wrong kind of bat or whatever in a market. Here's what I want to know. What's the strangest thing you've been offered to eat or you've actually eaten while being in China?
Pig blood.
What?
Ugh.
like they put, like, it's so big in China, and they're so, like, it's kind of like Arkansas. You know how everybody in Arkansas does crop work, and they're working outside and planting their own food and stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like that in China. They really self-sufficient, and I guess they can eat a lot more stuff than they're used to doing it, but, like, I've probably been offered, like, I'll just say pig blood.
Wow. Heard a lot of part of the pig, but not that one.
That's extensive. Yeah. Now, BJ, since we're on the food conversation, let's get to some good food. St. Louis Barbecue, you going Pappy's or you going Bogart's?
I actually don't even like barbecue.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I actually like St. Louis pizza and St. Louis Chinese food. People don't know those two things. This pizza place called Emo's. Jason Tatum actually, like, does commercials for him. I don't know if you've seen it before. And Chinese food. We have, like, really specific Chinese food. Our rice is really fried. And we have, like, crab rangoon that are really specially cooked. Like, only St. Louis people would know the taste. But barbecue, my parents love it.
All right, BJ, before we let you go, I got a chance to go to Mardi Gras in St. Louis. Can you explain to Tommy here that Mardi Gras in St. Louis is a blast? The St. Louis Mardi Gras. Will you tell him and explain to him how fun that actually is?
Bro, you have to get out here. It's so many people out there just having a blast, just having a good drink, and just give you that feel of like, oh, yeah, I'm about to have a good night tonight. You know?
Uh-huh. Well, while you're explaining stuff to me, explain to Ty why Cardinal baseball is the right way. The Cardinal way is the right way because he doesn't think the Cardinal way is the right way.
The Cardinal, the best fans in any sport ever.
11-time champions.
I'm a Royals fan, BJ.
The Royals? Oh, my God. They got one little lucky title in there. And you know what I'm saying? Ooh, they got a baseball. Now they got a football title. I might have to jump over to KC Sports myself.
Oh, my goodness. Well, BJ, next time we're in St. Louis, we'll have to go to Emo's Pizza. Maybe we'll stop by Ted Drew's or something, or one of those Asian places you were talking about as well.
Yes, sir, for sure.
Awesome, man. BJ Young, former Arkansas Razorback, kind enough to give us some time this morning. BJ, we really appreciate it, man, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you soon.
Okay, you guys, you know, it's all Arkansas love, man. I really appreciate you calling me, and I hope everybody's okay during the pandemic.
Russell in the shotgun, looks in the corner, touchdown Baylor!
I want you to watch this ball. He just throws this with unbelievable touch.
Russell over the middle, touchdown, Corey Coleman. And was he open in the middle of the defense?
That's when we're really good, when we can tempo a team and get after him. So always pushing that.
Russell up the sideline, Zamora goes up high, has it, and tiptoes into the end zone.
Our next guest had 35 total touchdowns his junior season and was the first quarterback under Kendall Briles starting out his first year as the offensive coordinator of the Baylor Bears. Seth Russell is with us now. Seth, I appreciate you hopping on with this, man. And when people are talking about this offense, Arkansas fans are really curious to know what they're going to see. As a guy that ran it, what's the best way that you would describe Kendall Briles' offense?
Well, Ty and Tom, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's always great to get back and talk football with guys that know how to talk football. And to kind of answer your question, one of the being a part of it, you kind of consider it controlled chaos. Now, there's a lot of intricate parts and pieces that dive into it, but whenever you're watching it, it's so exciting and being inside of it. It's just like it's a tornado. It's a hailstorm of just amazing play after play, you know, going deep, running the ball. It's just, you just never know what's going to happen. And so it's being a part of it was definitely a chaotic sense in itself, but also everything was very controlled from the inside.
Seth, what did Coach Briles teach you about the quarterback position as a whole?
Yeah, so one of his kind of big main teaching points was just trust the system. You know, trust your arm, trust the players around you, and then also trust, you know, that the coaches are going to do what they need to do. Obviously, I think early on I tried to, because they gave me a lot of freedom to kind of change the play or audible or adjust to whatever it is. I came to the sideline after one series that I had changed a couple plays. He sat down next to me and said, "Hey, Seth, trust the system. Trust us. Play football. Quit thinking. And just do what we need to do, because it's proven time and time again that we've been successful with what we've been calling. And the players that we've recruited and brought in will make you look really, really good."
Yeah. That gives us a little insight to his style. Let's drill down a little deeper on his style and who Coach Briles is as a person. It's Sam Pittman, the head coach, has made it clear he wanted to hire good people, high character. No one ever says they want to hire the opposite of that. But tell us who he is as a guy, who he is as a man. What did you enjoy just in spending time with him off of the field in a meeting room or watching film?
Yeah, so being at Baylor, we were basically, you know, you had, you know, Art Briles, which was his dad. You had Coach Levy, who is his brother-in-law. He had one of his best friends he grew up with in high school as a receivers coach. He had an offensive line coach who had been with Coach Briles for many, many years. And it is, I consider them my second family. You know, Coach Briles, Kendall and Sarah and their three kids, man, they're amazing people. They'll do anything. They'll run through a brick wall for you. They're those types of folks that they'll lay it on the line. They'll put their neck out there for you because that's just the type of people they are. You know, they're going to continue to fight, continue to claw, to be the best. You know, Kendall's always in the film room, you know, drawing up schemes, talking through different schematics of the, you know, downs, whatever it is. And he does a really good job of challenging whoever the quarterbacks are in the room. But one of his big, you know, main things that I really liked about it was he was very family-centered, family-focused, and really thrived off of, you know, seeing his people be successful.
What's important to click early, whether it's Felipe Franks or one of the other guys that is going to be in the quarterback room, what's important that has to click early whenever they get back on the field? I know they're doing the Zoom distance learning stuff right now. What has to click early with Kendall Briles to make this offense go for these quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I guess kind of the cliche saying is people need to buy in. But I think with him is being able to be, the repetition is kind of was our big focal point, was getting in, going fast, being productive, being accurate with the ball, making plays, catching, you know, hitting the run plays where they need to run. I think the initial thing that needs to start is obviously with the quarterback. That's going to be a huge, huge focal point. I consider the system to be very quarterback friendly. It's a completely different style than what Arkansas, I feel like, has been used to, you know, with a heavy run game has been the focus. Now it's going to be more, you know, split 50-50, but it's going to be bigger plays. It's going to be, you know, we consider our short game our run game. On top of that, you know, 3-5 yard gain is a good run. But being able to have the run pass option, being able to execute on that, but it all starts with the quarterback, you know, putting the ball where it needs to be and just making good productive plays.
We're speaking with Seth Russell, former Baylor quarterback here on the Morning Rush. Seth, going from the Big 12, then he moved on to Houston, then Florida State, and I think he was at FAU at a point in time as well. How do you think he's going to tailor his offense towards SEC talent and speed?
Yeah, you know, I think he's done a great job of adapting. You know, obviously each system has their specific players, whether that's, you know, 6'5" slow guys or if that's 5'8", 5'9", really fast, quick guys. And he's done a really good job of adapting, kind of going through, you know, going down to Houston with Derek King. You know, he's a shorter guy, but he's a runner. And so just really making and adjusting the offense to adapting around his players. I think they've done a really good job of being able to do that. And then out to FAU and then Florida State. And obviously the numbers kind of speak for themselves as they followed. I think with him, they do a really good job of just making sure that each player that's out there is out there for the right reason, that fits into the system, whichever way that may be. And they just, you know, being able to execute at a high level.
Seth, you mentioned what he brought to the quarterback room. Did he recruit you as well? I tried to look on 24/7 Sports last night. It didn't list who recruited you. Did he recruit you to Baylor?
No, so the one of the main coaches that recruited me was Philip Montgomery, who's now at Tulsa.
DC, right?
Yeah. He was the offensive coordinator, quarterback coach there at the time. So going into my junior year, he had just accepted the head coaching job at Tulsa. And so that's whenever we made the internal transition to making KB from receivers coach to quarterback offensive coordinator.
And so on that note, the reason I ask is because Coach Briles has really kind of made waves in the quarterback recruiting trail. Caden Salter is one of the most highly coveted. I think he's the number one dual threat quarterback in Texas. He's considering Arkansas. They signed Malik Hornsby in this last recruiting class, who is one of the better quarterbacks in the 2020 cycle. What do you think he brings to the table in terms of recruiting quarterbacks to Arkansas?
Yeah, I think it's just his reputation, his record, the way that the system is set up. Like I said earlier, it's very quarterback friendly. You know, I don't think any quarterback out there just wants to hand the ball off, you know, 75-80% of the time. They want to throw the ball deep. They want to make big plays. They want to put up big numbers. They want to win, you know, Maxwell Awards. They want to win national championships. They want to be the face of the university. And that's exactly what type of system that KB brings to Arkansas, is that highly sought-after system that quarterbacks want to be a part of. It's just so cool, and it's just one of those systems that you're like, you kind of drool over, I guess to say. And that's what system you want to be a part of as a quarterback.
Seth Russell, former Baylor quarterback who played under Kendall Briles when he was the offensive coordinator there, is with us here on the Morning Rush. Your Baylor Bears are much like Arkansas, going through a transition this year. New to the head coaching position at both schools, Sam Pittman at Arkansas, Aranda there. Well, what do you think the challenges are when you look at, you know, the lack of practice, the lack of spring, all this chaos in our world right now? How do you think programs like Baylor, like Arkansas, like Missouri, like Ole Miss, like Mississippi State, how do they fare going through this transition year with everything else going on?
Yeah, I think it's unprecedented. You know, there hasn't been a year, I don't think, at least in my, since I've been alive, is people have not been able to go through summer, spring workouts. I think there's going to be a lot of challenges early on, probably within the first half of the season. There's going to be a lot of heavy challenges. I think one of the big factors that I feel like a lot of people are going to face is hopefully not, but injuries. I think that's going to be something, because, you know, playing at full speed, not having done it for however long, can be a big factor. And also just accountability with the players. You know, are they doing their work on the outside? Are they staying accountable? Are they keeping each other accountable? But also with the new coaching staff, you know, there's different schemes, different, you know, styles of play that they bring in. And even though they're having the Zoom meetings, I mean, it's something, but you're not going to get the most out of it as you could if you were meeting in person, you know, drawing up on the board, you know, taking notes, whatever that may be. I think even with a system that's been set in place for several years, they're going to have their challenges just due to position changes, players that have gone, players that have come in. But I think it's going to be an interesting start to the season, to say the least. Yeah. But, you know, I think everybody has to go through this. And so it's not like it's an unfair advantage for one or the other. But I think it's going to be something that's going to be interesting to watch, at least from the outside, as well as, you know, kind of get some input from the inside with folks that are still playing that I'm still good friends with.
Yeah, I saw where Sam Pittman, the Arkansas coach, said yesterday there would be a conditioning test on day one when everyone returns. What percentage of players do you think are actually holding themselves accountable right now to the proper diet, to all the conditioning? It's not 100%. What would be your best guess on these guys doing what they're supposed to be doing right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, let's say if there's 100 people on the field or on the team, you know, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, 11 on special teams, if those guys that are starters know they want to be starters, probably maybe around, I would hope, 65 to 70%.
Okay.
You know, if you add in all the right, but realistically, I don't know, maybe around 55, 60 maybe, the right type of conditioning, I feel like. I mean, because in a team, you can really push yourself and hold each other accountable. But, you know, by yourself, you know, you do your sprints, you kind of get tired, you sit down, you take a break rather than continuing to push through and you know, have somebody else there beside you that's driving you. Yeah.
12 ounce curls.
Exactly.
Speaking with Seth Russell here on The Morning Rush, former Baylor quarterback, played under Kendall Briles. Seth, your first season as a full-time starter, coincidentally, was Kendall's first season as the full-time offensive coordinator. At any point through the season, did he seem nervous or was just as flawless as it seemed as it was on the field?
No, there was nothing nervous about him. I mean, he's a stone-cold killer. Like, he knows the system like the back of his hand. I mean, he grew up in it. He lives it literally with his dad. He developed it. I mean, it was a seamless transition between Coach Montgomery and KB. You know, obviously KB brought in his kind of, you know, different style of whatever it was on the offense, running game, passing game. He was excited about it, just as, you know, I was. We just basically kind of, one of the big Art Briles, one of his biggest things that he said to me was, go out and prove yourself. And so I think and KB took that approach every single day. We always had, you know, we're little old Baylor. We're not supposed to be successful. We're not supposed to be beating, you know, big teams. But as a staff, as a team, as a program, we really kind of took that and ran with it and use that as motivation. And so KB never had any nervous twitch or anything like that. He was like, hey, let's just go out and do our job.
Seth, it probably didn't hurt that you were throwing to guys like Katie Cannon, Corey Coleman. I remember watching those Baylor teams. You had a plethora of great wide receivers and weapons around you. And Arkansas, Kendall's got a lot to work with, whether it's Traylon Burks, Trey Knox, Mike Woods, and some others. He's got some weapons. How important were those guys for Bryce, for you, and for Baylor's offense's success over years to have stud wide receivers?
I mean, that's with any system. I mean, if you want to throw the ball deep, you better have somebody that can go get it and that can catch it. You know, and also make the small plays. You know, being able to take those 5 yards hitch routes, break a tackle, and go 85. That was kind of how we recruited our guys. The guys that we brought in were big time players, but worked hard on the back end, and all of it showed on the field. And then also, you know, not just having those big plays, but having the quarterback and receivers be on the same page more than most of the time. I think that's huge. You know, knowing the different, you know, styles, if the guy's more of a high ball player, if he's more of a, hey, just put it on me type of guy. And that's going to be one of the challenges I think is going to be faced early on with, you know, with whoever is at the quarterback position, whoever's going to be at the receiving position, is really getting that timing down. I think it's going to be huge, but, you know, just take each snap obviously very seriously. Cause you're with a new offensive coordinator coming in, he's trying to figure out who wants it, who doesn't, who can make the big plays and who can't. And he will make a change if it needs to be done.
Seth, one more serious question before we get into the fun ones. Your old teammate, Jarrett Stidham, looking like he's going to be the starter for the New England Patriots. How do you think he projects as a starting quarterback there in New England?
Yeah, you know, I think he'll do a great job. He's a smart quarterback. He gets the ball out of his hand. He's got a really easy throwing motion. He can spin the ball really well. He got a few snaps there early in the season, which I think has been, obviously it's really good for him just to get some experience on the field. Who knows what's going to happen with the draft, if they bring in a more veteran guy to kind of coach him up, whatever that may look like. But, if he gets his opportunity, you better watch out.
My man Ty here is always wanting to know about the best food spots. I'm just going to beat him to the question, beat him to the punch. But the best food spots, because he's always looking for a good college football road trip, and he wants to know where the good spots are to eat. So he's got a family tie there to the Baylor program.
Couple, yeah.
And, can you guide him? I know he's going to, if there's football back, he's going to be going to Waco.
Been to Cups, been to Health Camp, haven't been to Georgia's, been to Fuego. Do I need to go to Georgia's for Wing Wednesday? What are some other hot spots in Waco that I need to hit up when I make it back there?
Yeah, no, those are some great questions. So George's is obviously kind of a staple. So Sammy and Kyle, Sammy's the dad, Kyle's the son. They kind of run that joint. Sammy would always come up to, they'd cater us every Thursday, pretty much almost every Thursday, and just, we're basically family with us. You got a few spots there. There's a couple new joints. You got Milo's, which is kind of a more of a fancier kind of breakfast, lunch type of place. There's a couple of, if you're an acai bowl, kind of fruit bowl place there. There's Oh My Juice. It's a small little joint there, right there in downtown. But there's just places popping up all over the place in Waco, which is from the year whenever I started in 2012 to now. I mean, there's probably 60% more restaurants than what there were before.
I got to keep my eye on this guy over here because he'll be down there with Chip and Joanna. He'll be down there at Magnolia, looking at home decor.
That's not a bad place to go.
Yeah, that's where my man Ty will be, down there trying to be a Chip Gaines lookalike or something down there.
I don't know if I can find my real estate as successful as they've been. Seth Russell, former Baylor quarterback, kind enough to join us again. He was the first full-time quarterback in Ken O'Brien's first year as the offensive coordinator, giving some really good insight. Seth, I appreciate you making some time for us this morning, and hopefully we'll see that same type of offense that you ran at Baylor at first year in Fayetteville.
Absolutely, Tom and Ty. I really appreciate you guys having me, and y'all get after it.
All right, man. Thanks, Seth.
All right, talk.
All right, good stuff there.
Good spot. There's good spots to do in Waco. Now, Waco has changed a lot since I was there in middle school, comparatively when I went there last year. It's changed a lot, and there's a lot better food places to eat. Mm. I got to take you to Fuego. Really good taco place down there.
All right. I thought the football conversation, which was the meat and taters there, was really good. So, really good stuff.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.